The Sunday Baroque podcast is made possible by WSHU and the Friends of Sunday Baroque. You can find out more about the Friends of Sunday Baroque and find out how to become one yourself by visiting our website, sundaybaroque.org, under the Contact tab. During the past year plus of the pandemic, when it was not possible for musicians to rehearse and perform together, many of them turned to other projects they could do. Richard Savino, a guitarist and lutenist who is the director of the group El Mundo, used the time for researching, publishing, and recording. And the fruits of his labors is Archivo de Guatemala, a 2021 recording that features music from the Guatemala City Cathedral Archive by a variety of composers. There are virtuosic instrumental works as well as vocal pieces sung by Jennifer Campani, Nell Snedis, Ryland Angel, and Paul Shipper. And Richard Savino and two of those featured singers, Jennifer and Nell, join me via Zoom to talk about the new recording. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So congratulations on the new recording. It's great. a lot of this music is the result of colonialism. It's 17th and 18th century Spanish composers who went to Central and South America and then interacted with the indigenous people and missionaries and all. It's just a blend of traditional and folk music and church music and music from the missions. It's Guatemalan, it's Mexican, Spanish, Italian composers. Richard, would you just start by explaining what sparked your interest in this repertory and how the project first came together?
Well, for years, we as a group have been performing and recording music from Latin America, Spain, and Southern Italy, areas that were under a huge degree of Spanish influence. And I began to come across these pieces from the archive in Guatemala. And I reached out to two of the most important researchers of that repertoire, Alfred Lemon in Louisiana and Dieter Lenhoff in Guatemala City. And through my contacts with them and prior modern publications, I was able to begin to comb through the archive and see what was contained wherein. It's a fascinating archive in that it's voluminous, it's gigantic. There are, I think, 20 volumes, 15 to 20 volumes that are each volume is very large. And it not only contains music by composers in diaspora from Western Europe, it also contains composers that are native-born Guatemalans, who are the two most represented on the recording, Manuel Quiroz and Rafael Antonio Castellanos. And as you mentioned, with regard to the sort of, for lack of a better word, multicultural aspect to it, you know, that's a bit of a thorny issue these days, because one could be accused of some kind of cultural appropriation. But I reject all those kinds of arguments. I just say, is the music, in the words of Duke Ellington, if it sounds good, it is good. Mm-hmm. And so much of it is good. Mm-hmm. And beyond the compositions by the indigenous composers, meaning native-born Guatemalans, they had a massive collection of Spanish compositions and some Italian compositions that are remarkable. So they had to have the forces to perform these.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what was specific to the Guatemala City Cathedral in particular what's the specific connection?
Well, first of all, that's where they were housed. Okay. And Quiroz and Castellanos were both the maestro di capelle at that cathedral. Mm-hmm. When there was a huge earthquake in what is now known as Antigua Guatemala occurred in the 1790s, they moved it to what is present day Guatemala City. But they kept the archive of music intact. And it kind of really does have limitations on it from the early 17th century to the 1790s. Now, there were other archives associated with the cathedral, but this was the archive that tweaked my interest because it has this wonderful kind of segue from a 17th century naive Spanish Latin style through that of a high Baroque mixed with a sort of folkloric element, and then a sort of prescient classical style. Mm-hmm. You really hear like early classical music in some of the works. Mm-hmm. But some of the pieces, like I'll point out a couple of pieces by my colleagues here, in particular, a cantata by Joseph Torres that Jenny sings has a virtuoso violin part that is absolutely magnificent in the third movement that Adam Lamont just shocked me with how he nailed it, especially after we hung out the night before. You know, it's one of those things. Nell sings a beautiful jacara by Sebastian Durón, a native born Spanish composer, titled
Vaya pues rompiendo el aire.
Easy for you to say.
Yes, it is. I would love for each of you to just go around and tell me what your favorite composer or piece is from this recording and why. And it doesn't have to be the most, you know, because it's the most profound. It could be because it was the most fun or whatever. So Nell, why don't you go first?
Wow, that's an excellent and difficult question to answer. I'll just say what pops into my head, because every piece is so different, you know, and appeals in different ways. There are many pieces that sound kind of folky with a lot of percussion, and then there are these gorgeous high Baroque pieces with violin. But what's standing out to me at the moment is this piece called Clarines Suaves. It's this very simple duet, which I had known of and sung for years. I'd never had the opportunity to sing it with another human being. It had always been programmed with a recorder or something like that. And it's very kind of colonial sounding, three-quarter time, like a little bit of a waltz that upon first look, you might turn the page, you know. But Rich had this great idea of having us start, you know, using harps and guitars, and then starting with using a lot of a cappella duet texture with Jenny and me, which of course singing with Jenny is one of the great joys of my life. So suddenly there we were singing this, you know, it's in a very nice key, and it just kind of sparkled. You know, whereas in other iterations, maybe sparkled less. But anyway, I think the result on the recording with harps and plucked instruments and then these two kind of angelic voices singing in thirds, it's a kind of soprano dreamland.
If I can interject on that, the manuscript is quite unique in that there are a couple of different parts to it in the archive. On the original duo, it says dos voces sin bajo, so two voices without bass. And then a couple of pages later, you see a basso part for it. It says, you know, obviously it's to go with that piece. It has the same title, the same exact, you know, key, and just a little bit of a bass accompaniment part. Whether that bass accompaniment part was added later to help the singers stay in tune, or for whatever possible reason, that gave me the idea to create a prelude using lutes and guitars as an instrumental introduction, mm-hmm. and then go to the original, which was just the two voices, mm-hmm. which is what you were referring to, Nell.
Yeah.
And then kind of combining all the forces on subsequent verses. Mm-hmm. And it really came out as a sparkling. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my favorite piece as well. And Nell and I laughed because we're in thirds the whole CD, basically, and we can't always tell when we listen back who's on which part. So
wow.
There is something wonderful about hearing. I mean, it's not fun to hear yourself sing, but I can listen to myself when I'm with Nell because I don't know which one is me. So the Clarines Suaves is also, for some reason, my favorite moment on the CD. But I also love all of the duos, the Ángeles del Cielo, all of they're beautiful. They're just very simple melodies and easy to listen to and have great harp involved. And it's just, they're all very sonorous and I love listening to them.
Now, Richard, I realize, you know, you've done the research and all of this. And so it's sort of like asking you to pick your favorite child, but
I come from a very, very large Italian family.
So, but do you have some favorites, some things that maybe were like the kernel of inspiration for the rest of it? Maybe something that really drove you?
Interestingly, that you would ask that because the kernel of inspiration is on another disc.
Oh, well, do tell.
That we've recorded. It's Via de Jacaré, amigos. Oigan una Jacaría is one, and that's by Rafael Castellanos. And that was on our Kingdoms of Castile recording, if I'm not mistaken, or was it on our Zarzuela recording? And then there was the other one, Jesus, Jesus, which is on another one with Jenny. That's
and
on
this one.
And
it's also here.
Yeah, it's on this one. Right, but that was from a prior time. But on this recording, if I were to pick out some highlights, first of all, I want to just point out that it's not all music from the Guatemala archive. I thought it best to make it really a recording that people would want to listen to all the way through. And I also wanted to be able to record a volume 2, 3, 4, and 5. So I didn't want to use it all up. So I plugged in music that we know was played in these in this Latin American region, Central American region. For instance, the music of Gaspar Sanz is found in different archives. Mm-hmm. Corelli was played quite often. And the Corelli Chacona, which the theory is that Chaconas originated in the New World. And I thought, well, if we know that Corelli was highly influential in the New World, that would be a very important connection to make. Mm-hmm. One of the surprises for me was how our boy Ryland came to the plate with what's the one I just said? It's Valle de Jacara Amigos, okay? Because Ryland is a very proper, very good, and you know, English singer, and he's also a pop singer. And we come on, hey, you can get a little Latin on you. Go, grab your inner Latin, and he really did a great job with it. Paul's solo is fantastic. He, in the way his voice kind of like comes from the depths of his register. It's really hard for me to say. Two of the pieces, which are from Guatemala, but they're close enough. They come from Veracruz, Mexico, are by Juan Antonio Vargas y Guzman. And they come from the end of a manuscript that was dated 1776, which are the first six-string guitar pieces that we know of in the history of the guitar. Wow. And they're for guitar with basso accompaniment. And I thought that was important to document there. They're the earliest known pieces. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But they're just too many. As I said, I can't. Jenny's the one with the third movement with Adam's virtuosic.
He is amazing on that.
You know, it's really.
On the Torres Sosiega tu Quebranto. He's.
Yeah.
Adam is worth listening to.
Yeah.
Well, I don't listen to me, but he's amazing.
He sounds spectacular. And also those guitar pieces that Rich mentioned. They're really beautiful. And what's fun about the CD is that there are so many different textures, you know, so you go from a full string sound with four singers, and then you'll hear, you know, something with harp and guitar, which really, it was programmed beautifully because your ear is delighted by all of these textural changes throughout the CD. And that those guitar pieces are a really good example of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Lots of color.
Yeah. So some of these performances are world premiere recordings, and the music has, in some cases, only, you know, recently been rediscovered. So Nell and Jennifer, you're both experts in period music performance, but would you each talk about any special considerations or challenges in performing this repertory? You know, did its newness and unfamiliarity present any kind of special challenges or opportunities?
Not unfamiliar to us at all, because this is all we do. Or all I've been singing with Rich for over 20 years, I think. And this is like a old friend. I mean, even if it's new, it feels like I've already sung it. None of it felt like a new challenge. And I don't know how you felt now.
I think that's true when you really do specialize in the music of Spain and Latin America. You get used to the intrinsic musical language that exists, which is different from singing French music or German or anything else. But it's kind of like you have the key already when you know what to look for, where are the spots that are in three, and what are the spots that are in two, and really that's how you kind of key into this repertoire. So that doesn't feel new so much, and yet of course, it is new to you, and you have to figure out what the high and low points are of the pieces. And then there's the language bit, which a lot of times, as Rich knows well, when you're looking at these manuscripts, it's difficult to read sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. or something might be cut off. And so that, I think, would be the part that takes the most brain power, is just figuring out, is this underlay right? Is this, you know, what were they thinking when they did this? How shall we make it work? And if it is right, you know, sometimes it's counterintuitive. And so those are the things, I think, as singers, that we have to really pay the closest amount of attention to and figure out. But, of course, that's the fun as well.
That is the fun. And the rhythms are different than other music, and they're very tricky if you're just starting to do a lot of Spanish Baroque music. But as a listener, it doesn't sound that tricky. It just sounds very cool and collected. So,
And also, once you've done it a few times and you have the Rosetta Stone, you just are more or less, I wouldn't say you're on autopilot, because there are always challenging little spots. Like, for instance, Nell, in your solo, when Bill and I go into pizzicato accompanying you, and I can't remember what the text was. I just don't have the score right in front of me. But
Don't joke around. Not just.
Yeah. And you do it very, very pointedly. And Bill and I.
Not just.
And things are off the beat through there, and they shift where you would logically want to place the downbeat is not where it is. You have to just be able to look at it and go, okay, that's what it is, and hear it.
And that's a great point, Rich. It's very text driven. So you really have to understand what are the inner jokes of the piece, because they exist, you know, that you have to spend time with the text. That's an early music thing, of course. Not that other singers don't do that, but in early music, it's so important to deeply understand the text and color it appropriately. So that's a great example. If you looked at the music, you might want a crescendo through there, but in fact, the person is going.
Like for Jenny, with you, with the opening movement of the Tortoise, where you have the rocking of the boat, you know, it's like, that's another very good example in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is all very text driven. So that's how we spend, the music just happens, but the text is where we spend our time getting ready to get together and perform.
And to the credit of my colleagues, you know, I slap it all together and I go, figure it out and let me listen to it, okay? And so without them putting forth their expertise, I would be sort of lost. I can fake it to a certain extent, but once I hear it from them, then I say, okay, no, this is the accompaniment that I want for that. We're going to have this drop out there, and then, you know, plug in different instruments in different accompaniment fashions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad that you brought up, you know, language and text, because I did want to ask you, Nell, in particular, because your specialties, you know, are Latin American and Spanish Baroque music, but I understand you're also a language coach for singers, and this, you know, the language and pronunciation, and just the, you know, the translation and idioms are probably quite different than they might be for modern Spanish. So does that create any kind of other issues that you have to consider?
It's interesting. Yes, it's different. The language is different than modern Spanish. And so, you know, it's kind of like, if depending on the region and the time period and how intense you want to be about it, you could get very, very wormholy about different kinds of pronunciations. But this music is later. And so really what we try to do, because part of research into pronunciation is you also want it to be understood. And luckily in Latin America at that time, I think that the pronunciation is very close to, you know, like standard, let's say, Colombian easy for me to say.
Yeah.
Colombian pronunciation, which is kind of what I'm told is like like the radio pronunciation of Latin America. So basically we try to use that for this. Make sure that it's clear, make sure that none of us slips into Italian, you know, which is very easy to do too when you're got a bunch of projects in your head. But it's more straightforward, I think, this Latin American Baroque pronunciation. That's not talking about different dialects like, you know, Negrilla or Quechua, different languages, actually. That's in a whole other
ballpark.
And also, I think is very close, which is good.
One of the other things to add to what Nell just put forth is if you have a piece that's coming from Castilla, and it finds its way to Guatemala, how do you pronounce it? Do you use a Castilian accent that we consider modern day with, or even what we might assume was used in the 17th century with the Fethéta or not? You know,
we don't know the answer to that.
My decision was not to go to Spain, but to actually make it really
do it as it would as it would be done. But that's one of the considerations to be taken into account.
You know?
Right.
Totes.
Some policeman is going to pull us over and go, "Wait a minute! On that tourist piece, you didn't use a Fethéta. I'm sorry, in Madrid they use the Fethéta."
but that's exactly why I ask that, because there are these sort of layers, and with any early music, you know, you're making decisions about intonation, what instruments to use, gut strings, there are all these decisions. And with this, and with any repertory, including this repertory, there are language and pronunciation decisions. And
Correct. And
particularly when you have this amalgam of languages and cultures, and then the outside influence that's now, you know, here. And so there are lots and lots of variables, I think, that really kind of layer on.
It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun work.
Yeah. Yeah.
There also aren't vocal decisions to make necessarily in the way of vocal production, because Nell and I and Ryland and Paul sing Baroque music because it suits our natural voice. Mm-hmm. So we're not trying to make it sound a certain way. We just sing how we sing, and it fits the repertoire. So besides the language decisions, the vocal decisions aren't there.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is, you know, it's gorgeous music. It's beautifully performed. Is there a bigger message at all that you want to communicate with this recording? I know you want additional volumes, Richard, but aside from that, is there a bigger message? Is there a cultural message here?
Well, that's a very tricky question to answer, you know, because right now we're living in a time where it's a very weird place where I see certain people advocating to only having one person from a particular background to perform a particular role, let's say in a Broadway show or in a movie. And I think personally that defeats the sort of nature of understanding, appreciating, and having a broad spectrum of people integrated and appreciating the diversity that exists in our world. Mm-hmm. You know, it's to me, the whole issue here is how did these worlds come together? What was taken from them? What's good? We all know that there were really egregious crimes committed by the colonizers of Latin America. We understand that. But what did come out of it that's a work of art that we can appreciate, that shows these cultures complementing each other? And I think that's more or less how I could best answer your question.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, Nell, you want to add to that?
Add a tiny thing onto that, mm-hmm, would be that part of what's exciting for us about discovering new works that are in this oeuvre that we love is to just kind of unearth it and bring it out to shine, that there is such wealth in these archives, so that, you know, it's a simple message, but it's true that there's so much beautiful music from this archive that deserves to be heard and recorded as best as we can. And then hopefully other people will get turned on to it. And this is like our missionary musician aspect, where, you know, we just want to spread the word of the music of Latin America in the Baroque period to be enjoyed. There's a lightness and there's a depth to it that I think is unique and kind of, I don't know, to me it feels like a balm right now in this time, this kind of music. I mean, not just because I'm singing on it, but in spite of the fact that I'm singing on it, it's really.
That makes it all better.
Great. Well, I have been speaking with Richard Savino, Nell Snedas, and Jennifer Campani about their 2021 recording, Archivo de Guatemala, music from the Guatemala City Cathedral Archive. Congratulations again, and thank you so much to all three of you for chatting with me today.
Thank you, and it's on Naxos International, just so you know.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.